Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mound Talk with Sioux City Explorers Manager Steve Montgomery. Mound Talk is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Sioux City Manager questions about the Explorers, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Steve's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, Steve talks to us about what he's been doing to prepare the team for next season. He shares his thoughts on Dave Nitz retiring, and Steve tells us about the meanest practical joke he ever played on his son. So let's get right to Mound Talk.
Well, what's welcoming you back to Mound Talk with Steve Montgomery. Steve, do you have any team updates you'd like to provide for us?
Just trying to re-sign some guys back right now, looking through various release lists. Probably the same thing every manager is doing at this point, trying to decide what is a right fit for them moving forward, and deciding, you know, who you really want back, because obviously you did your exit interviews, but now that you've had a chance to take a couple weeks and step back and really sink your teeth into the evaluation purposes, obviously your valuations change.
Before heading on to anything baseball related, I know that you live in Tampa Bay in the area where Hurricane Irma was kind of heading through. So we just wanted to first of all address family okay, house came down okay?
Yeah, wife and kids doing good. The kids were excited. They missed 11 days of school, so, and they only have to make up 4 hours of it, so they're very excited. Everything went good. Family actually slept in a walk-in closet that night. I was still up in Sioux City, doing all my, I guess after the season duties, and the kids and wife slept in a walk-in closet, and woke up the next morning, it was all gone, and just trees, limbs, branches, stuff like that kind of flew around and stuff. We had a friend of ours that a tree fell on his lanai in his house, but other than that, just had some flooding a couple miles away, but for the most part escaped it pretty scot-free.
The big talk around the American Association is the call in Game 4 of the championship series. While your team isn't playing in that, I'm sure you've watched and kind of seen what went on. What were your thoughts about that call?
Man, it's a tough call. I look at it two ways. One, the call really at the time did not affect the play. Now the Winnipeg, if you read everything that went on about that call, maybe the guy doesn't swing at that pitch, because he said that he swung at the pitch because he heard balk being called. So that's a free swing for the hitter. But if you do look at the celebration, Medina is the only one that doesn't run out there, because he said Medina heard it. At that time, I mean, one side of it says they're upholding the rules of the game. The other side says that, you don't interject yourself in the game. I side with you don't interject yourself in the game. I'm the one who builds my team more on speed than probably anybody in this league. And I do nothing but all year long complain about balk in this league. That's a balk. This is a balk. He's not stopping. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. He's licking on the mound. There's various things of balk that are overlooked in this game. And I think just to call it in that situation, it's kind of like the NFL last play of the game. You kind of eat your flag. I thought I was watching the game with my son, and my son said that he balked on the 0-1 pitch. And I thought he did on the 0-1 pitch. He really just rolled through it and went. At that point, I think the home plate umpire maybe should have bent over and said, "Hey, Medina or Martin, I don't want to put myself in the middle here. Tell him to make sure he stops on these pitches, please." I think that could have been done, but it wasn't. But you flip it around to, he did have the guy 0-2. All he had to do was make a pitch. But that's a hard thing to do when you've let your guard down, because you're in the moment, you're locked in, and then all of a sudden you've won it, and then the celebration's on, and you're jumping around, and now you have to go from doing that to flipping a switch. And we know how hard it is to flip a switch. We see it all the time. You talk to all the managers in the league. You've been around long enough to know that managers want momentum going into the playoffs. They when their team has clinched, they want to keep playing good baseball, because it's hard to flip a switch. And, you know, you're talking about having to flip a switch in literally 35 to 40 seconds. Very hard thing to do.
Well, the season's been over for you for about a month now, so I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on the season, things you're taking away as positives for yourself, things you might want to do differently next year.
Well, I think, you know, with the upgrades we've made at our stadium, you know, with the new outfield wall, obviously with the clubhouses, you know, we have another phase going in where they're putting in, you know, all of our stuff is not outdated, but it is outdated. And they're putting in new drainage so that our dugouts don't flood. All of our main drains were in the dugout, so our dugouts would flood because that's where everything is set to drain. Now they're putting them out on the field and stuff like that, so we're going to be able to level the field off, stuff like that. But going back to the outfield wall, more homers were hit in this year with this new wall than any other year that I've been there. So, you know, I'm going to look to add maybe a power hitter or two and not get away from my speed game and such, but maybe add a power hitter or two in the middle, someone that can drive the ball over the wall, because the ball flew at my stadium this year. And, you know, my luck is that, you know, I'll do that and then it won't go nowhere. But you know, I'm going to look to do that. And I'm also going to look, you know, I thought I had my starting rotation pretty set coming out of spring. And we did, but injury and organizational pickups kind of hurt those chances, but I might try to add some more depth into my rotation and maybe keep a long guy in the pen who can kind of maybe spot start, or if a guy gets picked up, move him right into the rotation.
Now, I know that you're just kind of out of the season, but being the manager and kind of the GM at the same time, you don't really get kind of a break. So are you already working on next season's team?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm already working. I got a list, in fact, sitting right in front of me on my table of released players and looking through them. And, you know, there's a lot of guys who are declaring free agency right now. I think just looking at my list right now, there's 5-6 players right now who have declared free agency. Normally the guys that have declared free agency are, you know, 4 or 5 year big league guys and that were stuck in AAA. So just looking at that, you know, that those aren't somebody that we'll try to sink our teeth into right now. I've also got involved a little bit more on the foreign market. You know, I'm looking overseas a little bit, guys who played over there. I really never tapped into that, but developed a good contact this year for overseas. And Bobby Post, my pitching coach, has a contact as well. So we've been looking a little bit overseas as well. But, you know, just right now is just basically comprising your list, seeing if anybody tickles your fancy, and also trying to get trades facilitated that you made during the season. You know, guys that you moved, maybe you're owed a player to be named later, or you owe them a player to be named later. Trying to get all those squared away so that you have all the, you know, your people in place moving forward that, you know, you're either going to want back or, you know, ultimately try to trade or just straight up release them.
The never-ending job of Steve Montgomery. Okay. Well, let's head to fan questions. We first of all start with Wyatt. He says, were you disappointed that you were not offered the Fargo job, or were you and we just didn't know that?
No, I was never offered the job. I talked about it with someone inside of the organization, but I'm happy where I'm at. I like Sioux City. I like the people I work for. I've always said that. I love my owner. I love my general manager. I have a great relationship with the community, and I have a great relationship with my pitching coach. My pitching coach lives there full time. So, you know, moving forward, I don't want to go anywhere that Bobby can't go. And Bobby owns a business in town. So, you know, I don't know what his availability would be if I happened to move, but I would want him with me nonstop. So, you know, I'm just happy where I'm at. And I like the people I work for, and I like the community, and I think that's important. And, you know, moving forward, did the job interest me? Of course, it interests me a little bit because of the ties I have back there. But when you sit down and you put the positives with the negatives, I just felt, you know, that Sioux City was the place I wanted to be. And, you know, there was never any talks with anybody of any importance about the job. So, you know, just moving forward, I just, you know, I'm happy where I'm at. And, you know, I'm looking forward to 2018.
Joe says, I love Explorers baseball, but it won't be the same without Dave Nitz. Dave, we will miss you.
Yeah, I'm trying to convince Dave Nitz to come back. I mean, I know the last day he threw out the opening pitch and he threw out the last pitch, and a very emotional time, man. I was getting teared up myself just thinking about, you know, the guy is 40-some years or 30-some years. I don't know how long he's been doing it. You know, I say on the show all the time, I think you've heard me say that, you know, he's the only guy living that, you know, went through and knew Shoeless Joe. And, you know, I give him a lot of crap being old, but what a professional he is. I mean, some of the questions he comes up with, he's a student of the game. He really helped me my first year. And I'll never forget the quote he said to me was, if he goes, if you worry about what happened yesterday, you won't be prepared for today. And I really have taken that to my everyday preparation for that night's game. If I worry about what happened, you know, about a call or how we played and stuff, then I'm not going to be prepared for today's game. So, you know, that he said that to me my first year, and it's kind of stuck with me about that. And I even try to use that with my kids, you know, with my kids' baseball and with my kids' schooling and stuff like that. If you look in the rearview mirror, then you're not going to be prepared for what is coming in life.
That makes perfect sense. Dave asks, he says, I don't understand how Nate Sampson was good enough for the Atlantic League when it was playoff time, but they did not want him before then. Isn't this the independent league that is supposed to be the best of them all? It would seem that they would want a talent like him the whole season.
Yeah, I mean, that's what everybody thinks, is that the Atlantic League is that much better than the American Association. But, you know, I don't personally see it. I think that, you know, the Atlantic League has a lot more veteran players. They don't have roster rules and limitations, the LS statuses that the American Association have. So they are filled with a bunch of veteran players. But I'd like to play an all-star game with them. I think that would be a showcase for major league organizations to come out and really, really watch and really tie in a 4-day all-star event where you brought the Frontier, the American Association, and the Atlantic League and play a 2-game round robin against each other and just play it. Now, I know that you'll sit there and we, you know, especially being managers going, hold on. That means you're going to have to, you know, you'll have to have, you know, 12 pitchers and you'll have to have 12 position players and stuff like that. But I just think it would be a way of showing great exposure for independent baseball. And I think it would be great to see, and Major League Baseball would be very, very interested in seeing that, because then it's the best of the best from all three major independent leagues. I don't think that'll ever happen, but, you know, another thing is take the American Association champion versus the champions of the Atlantic League and play like a super series. I know it's more cost and everything to the owners, but that would be a neat little thing to do as well. But yeah, they say that's the Premier League, but you know, that's someone's opinion. Until it's settled on the field, in my opinion, I think we're just as good as the Atlantic League.
I agree with you completely. Next up, Tony says, Skip, you have seemed to be very critical of the league and how they let Winnipeg get away with stuff. After that call in the final series, you look like your complaints are justified.
You know, I mean, I don't want to sit here and take away with what Winnipeg has done over the course of the last 2 years. They've been obviously they've been the team standing at the end, and I credit Rick for pulling trigger, and Tom Vaith. They do a great job. Rick and Tom do a fabulous job. It's a two-man staff. I think they're the only two-man staff in the whole league, and they do a great job of preparing day in and day out. It's just Sometimes when you're on the outside looking in, maybe it's a little bit of jealousy because we're not able to pull those moves. But getting that pulling that trade with Joplin in 2016, I think helped them win the championship in 2017 because they had arguably the best reliever in the league this year in Victor Capion out of that deal, and who proved to pitch very, very important innings throughout the playoffs. And if they don't have Victor Capion, who knows if they're sitting at the end holding that trophy. But and then pulling the Charlie Rosario trade, it's a big deal. They added another starter depth, and I look back at 2015, I felt like I was a starter away, and you never know when you're going to get back in that situation. And the asking price at that time was very, very steep for me to acquire the starting pitcher that I had wanted at the trade deadline. I just thought the asking price was too steep. But then in hindsight, maybe if you do that, you're pitching in game five in that championship series and you got Patrick Johnson the ball. So, you never know when you're going to get there. So you need to put, all the eggs in one basket. And, they've done that and they've done a great job.
Returning to the call, Ben says, why are people so hard on the league about that call? Wichita still could have won. Isn't that the reality?
No. The reality is that I explained earlier that, they went from winning a championship to the ultimate high to an ultimate low to now having to refocus at the task at hand. Because you don't see that. You don't see that you let your guard down and you're celebrating, and then now you get it ripped away saying, hold on, runner at third base. Now you're like, you got to be kidding me. So now you have to refocus and get that. So, and then reality is once they lost game four, I knew game five was just, they really had no chance because of the, because of just what I just explained, the ultimate high to the ultimate low to, you're a champion, you're getting ready to raise that jug that you worked so hard for all year. So now you got a day off and you got to play. So you knew that it was going to, and a ruckus crowd, you had a hockey crowd there. I mean, that place looked like it was rocking, and, Winnipeg comes out victorious. So, if they were going to win the championship, they had to do it in game four. And, maybe they did win it, and just a call didn't go their way, and ultimately it cost them a championship.
Little Major League Baseball for Steve. William asked, do you think that the Indians are the team to beat for the World Series?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I grew up about an hour away from Cleveland, so I'm rooting for them. One of my real good friends, the guy I played with, is their pitching coach, Mickey Callaway. Just the sheer depth of their starting pitching and their bullpen. Now, I don't think they have the best bullpen in the playoffs. I think that goes to the Yankees. Their starting pitching, you look at it's 2-1 right now, Cleveland, and realistically could have been very easily 2-1 Yankees. But I think if we were sitting here 2-1 Yankees, I'd be like, oh, I don't know. But 2-1 Indians, I think that they, they got to get Kluber back on track. He had his worst start of the year the other day. But they can and they've proven in the past that they can take – their starting pitchers can take the ball on short rest with what they did last year in the World Series and still be effective. So, I like them as the favorite. I think the other, in my personal opinion, the other team that is my, I guess, second favorite would be Houston. They're young, they're exuberant, they play with a high energy. The field is a great home field advantage because it's so tiny. Now, I know that everyone says, well, both teams got to play on it, but you get to play on it, 81 times. And that's a big difference to, we all build our teams in our league to our own field. You look at St. Paul, who you cover exclusively, the ball flies there. So you're going to have a bunch of power hitters. When I come there, I'm not I'm not a bunch of power hitters, you know, so I got to find different ways to win in that ballpark. So I like Houston, and, you know, the National League, I just think, you know, if the Dodgers can come somehow get in, I mean, you'd like to see the Dodgers and, you know, Nationals tied the series up. My personal opinion, the Cubs won last year. Let's get them out. Time to go. Let's get another 180 years of the curse, and it'd be a great thing to talk about. But, you know, I'd like to see the Nationals and the Dodgers in the NLCS. I think that would be a great pitcher's duel against two, you know, guys that, you know, like a Bryce Harper, and, you know, everybody's been all over Yasiel Puig, but he just seems to be coming up with big hits, and it's great to see. But I think Indians are the favorite. I think whoever comes out of the American League wins it. You never know.
Speaking of the Cubs, James would like to know, he says, could the Cubs really win another series? That would be just unreal.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I'm in Cubs country. I just thought that it was so neat how Cubs fans really thought there was a curse of the goat, and all. I just thought it was really neat to see. And then when they won it last year was unbelievable. Just to see the pure joy out of some lifelong Cubs fans and everything. Now they did it at the expense of my Indians. Now flipping it, there's nobody that needs a World Series worse than Cleveland right now.
Very true.
They won it with LeBron James, but the Indians haven't. I remember my dad, and you know, my dad has been dead for 17 years. I remember my dad saying that the Indians haven't won anything since like 1950 something, and then that's when Willie Mays made the catch and all that stuff. It'd just be great to get the Indians to get the monkey off their back, and then, you know, after that point, you know, just let the best teams win.
We're going to get a little hockey knowledge out of Steve. Mason asks, he says, Skip, give us some hope that the Tampa Bay Lightning fans, that Steve Yzerman will have the team in contention for the Cup.
I tell you, I like their chances this year. I think they've revamped it a little bit. Obviously hockey's a different animal because it just kind of – it's the one sport that you watch in the regular season and you're like, wow, you know, that's pretty good. You watch playoff hockey and it is unbelievable. And I think Tampa could do it this year. I mean, they got to stay injury-free. That's the biggest thing. They got to obviously they're in a tough conference. But, you know, just get yourself in the playoffs is what's important. And a lot of teams make the playoffs, I think 16 total, 8 from each side. But once you get in, you got to really strap it on. And it's physical. It's definitely physical. But, I'd also like to see a good friend of mine, Paul Edmonds, is the voice of the Winnipeg Jets up there. I also like to see them make a deep run because, Paul's a good friend, and I haven't seen him in a couple years, but, it's always nice when you know somebody that is involved in something like that to see him make a deep run.
Tyler asks, he says, Alabama and Clemson look set for another run to the national championship game. Do you see anyone stopping them?
Nope. You'll see it again. It'll be another Alabama-Clemson national championship game. It's the one sport that I truly, really enjoy watching is college football. And I'm a huge Ohio State fan. And, you know, we lost to Oklahoma a few weeks back. But I don't see anybody stopping them. Alabama, they played their worst game this past weekend. They still win by 8. And, I don't see anybody stopping them now. They got Georgia looming here, and Georgia's been playing good, but really Georgia hasn't really played anybody yet in their schedule. So the ACC, you know, you got Florida State, who lost their quarterback and now is lost. And you have Miami, who's kind of resurging with the old Georgia coach. His name's eluding me right now. And I just don't see anybody. If they stay, and this is the biggest thing, if their quarterbacks stay healthy.
Yeah.
I think if Clemson lost their quarterback, they would be in trouble. I think if Alabama lost its quarterback, they would be able to hand the ball off to any five-star recruit and still win games. But Clemson and Alabama in the national championship game, no doubt.
Jacob asks, he says, man, what happened to Florida State this season? Did losing to Alabama really leave them that shook?
Well, it wasn't losing to Alabama. It was losing your quarterback. You know, you lost your quarterback. You lost a guy who was a warrior, really. When you watch the games, and we're privy to that being where my location is, he would take hit after hit after hit and just keep getting up and up and up and still led them on drives. So when you lose someone of that stature, not only are you losing your leader, but you're losing really the most important person on your team. Now, obviously, everybody argues that, you know, in football, it's all 11 men. But realistically, the quarterback is making the decisions on whether to audible, whether to change the play, whether to run it a different location, where to throw the ball, stuff like that. So it's the most important position. And when you lose that guy, you're going to struggle. And I think they brought in another true freshman. And this guy was a sophomore and played as a true freshman. They brought in a true freshman who made some good passes this past weekend against Miami. It's just that sometimes as a true freshman, you know, the game kind of speeds up a little bit on you, and those windows that you threw into in high school are a little smaller. And if you just hesitate for a split second, you know, it's either picked off or it's incomplete. So, but Jimbo Fisher does a great job, and he'll write the ship, and he'll have him right back in national championship contention next year.
Lucas has our controversial question of the week. He says, I don't get why the Cavs traded Kyrie Irving. Is it Kyrie or Kyrie? I think it's Kyrie.
Kyrie.
Actually. Yeah.
Kyrie.
If LeBron is that good of a player, wouldn't he be able to get along with a guy that is that talented? That makes me question what kind of player he is.
Well, I think if you look at the Kyrie and LeBron situation, it was, I think, Kyrie wanting to step out of LeBron's shadow. And no matter where LeBron is, there's going to be a shadow because he is arguably the best player in the world and arguably maybe the best player of all time. I know there's the Michael Jordan argument and everything like that, but you look at the guy and he, you know, it's, you know, 8-9 rebounds a year. He averages 7-8 assists, you know, 25 points. Those are numbers that are just unheard of. And, you know, Kyrie, I think, was tired of being in the shadow of LeBron and wanted to get away where he felt that his game was going to take it to the next level so that he could be talked about as one of the greatest of all times. And, you know, when we sit here and this is how I look at it. Let's be honest. Do you think Scottie Pippen was a top 50 all-time greatest player of all time? I don't believe so, but since he won that many rings and he was with Michael Jordan, it puts him in that top 50. I don't think Kyrie wanted to be Scottie Pippen, and he wanted to be his own man. And it's just, we'll see. We'll see, because I think also a little bit of it is Kyrie was probably looking at the future. Is LeBron going to stay in Cleveland after this year, or is he going to the Lakers? You know, there's a lot of talk that he wants to go other places. So, you know, do you want to be stuck there without LeBron? You have Kevin Love. But other than that, you with the signing of Dwayne Wade, you can't really name too many other players on their team because they're really not that good. They're just kind of role players. So, you know, Kyrie, he's in a better, you know, Boston's going to be a force this year, and we'll just see how it ends up. And, you know, those two teams should be facing off in the Eastern Conference Finals.
We have a few questions for Dr. Steve. The first one is from Debbie. She says, I would like your advice about something. I know my parents are struggling financially to pay bills. I work to try to take some pressure off of them while I go to high school. Next year I'm going to college, but I saved up enough money at work to get a car. Now they think I should pay rent. I am almost 18, but still a high school student. Shouldn't they just be pleased that I saved up so much money and took that burden off of them?
Boy, that's a tough question. You know, when you think about it, and I look back at my childhood and everything, your parents have have done everything in their power to give you everything that you've ever wanted, that you've ever needed, and maybe probably to the point of spoiling. I think most parents are on that fence now. But, you know, if your parents are struggling financially, you know, I mean, I don't think you have to give them all of the money you save, but, you know, maybe kick them a few bucks here or there, not per se for rent, but just as a nice gesture. And I think in the long run, your parents would really appreciate that. And, you know, it's a hard place to be in when you're financially struggling. You know, anything you can do to help your parents out, I think everybody would look at you and give you a big thumbs up if you did that.
Noah says, I'm a single dad with a daughter that wants to start dating. Any ideas on how I can make it clear to them, the boys, I assume, that they better treat my daughter with respect without upsetting my little girl?
Oof, I got a little girl, too, and I'm fearing that day. And, yeah, I mean, you have to set ground rules right from the beginning. You know, I think that how your husband treats you would be a starter, letting that guy who's taking out your daughter see that, so that he treats her with respect. And you know, that's with the times now have changed so much that some of the things kids say now, even my son at 13, I'm just like, where did you learn that? And you know, had I been 13 saying that, I'm sure I would have you know, had a wooden spoon or whatever whatever my mom had in reach would have been upside my head or my butt. So, you know, it's hard times nowadays, but, you know, you have to give your kids a little bit of leash. Just don't give them too much because, kids seem to run with it.
Steve always has a good lead in for the next question. Sheila asked a question that I think every parent can ask if you get down to it. She says, my son is 3 and said penis one day, and my husband laughed and thought that was the funniest thing. Now he says it all the time. How do I stop this?
I'd be laughing too, to be quite honest. You know, the thing is that kids, I think we all know that. Kids are going to do what gets a little bit of a laugh out of their parents, and they're also going to do, you know, if he wouldn't even have given them a reaction, and we could have said, hey, that's not a word. Where'd you learn that word? And it would have been gone in his vocabulary forever. But where a 3-year-old picks that up is beyond me. And, yeah, you just got to try to explain to him that that's a naughty word and, you know, try to get him to just stop saying it or take a toy away when he does say it. But, it's I have to defend your husband at that point because I probably would have been chuckling myself.
Sam says, Mongo, I know that you said you love Reese's Peanut Butter Cups and Kit Kats, I believe. Is that the preferred candy given away at the Montgomery household on Halloween night?
Well, you know, I just let – when we do that, obviously me and my wife take our kids and we walk around and we just leave a bowl out by our front door and we just say, take one, and – you know, who knows if they just take one or somebody dumps the whole bowl into a bag and they're gone. But we normally let our kids pick out what they want to hand out. You know, normally they go with a lot of like Sour Patch Kids. My kids really like gummy stuff. And there's normally some Sour Patch Kids in there. There's normally some gummy bears, stuff like that. They don't really get into the chocolate and peanut butter combos and stuff. If they do go chocolate, it's normally just a straight Hershey bar. They will go, or they love Dove. They love Doves. If my kids love Dove chocolate, but it's not really. My daughter can't stand peanut butter, and my son, who probably from age 10 to about 12, really loved peanut butter. He's kind of gone away from that. He's more into like lunch meats and stuff like that now because, you know, he's trying to get a, you know, as a teenage, he's trying to get a six pack. He wants to look like the guys on those muscle mags now. So, yeah, that's more gummy treats that are going to be in my bowl out front.
Amanda would like to know, she says, I think it would be cool if you made kids stand at the end of your driveway on Halloween when they were trick-or-treating and had them open their bags open, and you would fire the candy into the bag from your porch.
Yes, that would be that'd be great, because there are some kids that I would intentionally miss the bag and hit them with. That would be a cool kind of thing, you know, seeing who would catch them and stuff like that. But we have some, my community is so much kid oriented that we'll go through probably 10, 12 bags of candy. There's an orthodontist who pays $10 per pound of candy. And if you want to sell your candy, he'll buy it.
Wow.
So trying to get away. So, you know, my son's kind of caught in between. He's like, I said, well, just take the stuff you like and then sell the stuff you don't like. So I think he wants to do that because, you know, obviously being a teenager, he wants to do everything for money now. If I ask him to put a dish away from dinner table, it's, you know, what is it? It's $5, right? And it's just like, wow. And, that'd be a pretty cool idea. But, you know, obviously we know that wouldn't fly all the time.
Our last question for this week comes from Leon. He says, do you scare kids when they come to your door to get candy on Halloween?
I normally don't answer the door. Just like I said, I'm normally out with my kids. We thought about dressing up and doing that with our kids. But, I mean, I'm 6'7", 6'8", and I don't know too many costumes that fit. I've thought about it, but, you know, last year my kid went as one of those scary clowns. My daughter's been Batgirl kind of like for 3 straight years. She just loves the costume. So she's kind of done that for 3 straight years. We normally walk around. But, yeah, I'm not into the scaring of the kids and such. But I did scare my son last year with his clown mask. Him and his mom went and got a shoe. I told my daughter to hide in the room with me, so he didn't know. He knew we were home, but he thought we were in my bedroom. He went into his room, and I was standing there with the clown mask. And I'm telling you, I've never seen a kid jump so high in my life. I felt bad because his heart was pounding through his chest and everything. But just a little practical joke here in the Montgomery household.
The one-time practical joke I'll never do again, I would gather.
No, I will never do that again, because he was – he was pretty shook up.
I bet. Well, Steve, thanks for joining us this week.
All right, thanks.
We want to thank Manager Steve Montgomery for joining us on Mound Talk this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Sioux City Explorers manager, please send them to us at asksteve@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's asksteve@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Sunday evening so we can give the skipper a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Mound Talk.